In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we'll be talking about going on a crusade, not for the Holy Grail, but the Black Templar and their endless crusading. They'll be there. Real quick, as always, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you like the show, please comment on it and follow us on Spotify or now YouTube. We also now have the option. Now, we're on YouTube. At time of release of this recording, there'll be 3 videos there, but they'll be there, which is more than there were a month ago. We've also added, for those of you who want to support the show, we've added a Patreon tier that gives you the show ad-free for $4.99 a month. If you want to help us out, it really does. It helps us do a lot more, especially like YouTube, a lot more content, because we can buy better equipment and use better software. As I've said a million times, we're never going behind a paywall here. The Patreon is just for people who like the show, who want to get it, you know, ad-free and want to support us. And we massively thank you for doing so. In addition, in the show notes, you'll see a link to our Discord. Please, if you like the show and you want to interact more about 40K lore, join the Discord. It's completely free. We have everything in there about from stuff about the show. Great place to tell me all the things I get wrong. Does come up. I'm not perfect, and I'll continue not being perfect. But also, it's a really good place to talk about, you know, get literature recommendations, get gameplay advice, or just generally talk about it.
Just movies, literature.
Yep.
I mean, really anything that's adjacent to, it's anything that's your sci-fi fantasy, just any, We talk about everything. They got channels for everything. And our moderators do a fantastic job with keeping the channels fresh, keeping people engaged. I love it.
Keeping it organized. I mean, that's one of the biggest things they do is they are the one, that's why this thing's as well organized as it is. So big shout out to them. Solarzio, I'm doing their screen names. So some of these I'm going to pronounce wrong. Solarzia, Solarzlia, Naz, Doc, Maestro, Query, Cthulhu, Gersback, Noogles, and just Steve. One of them decided to make my life easier. Just Steve.
Hey, same with me.
Exactly.
Screen names, it's Brad.
Brad, it's just Brad. All right, but on to the cast. So let's get into some Black Templar. On our last cast, we covered the second founding of the Imperial Fists with the creation of the Black Templars. We also spent a bunch of time talking about the progenitor badass Sigismund. But today, we're talking more about the Black Templars themselves, and namely what makes them so unique in 40K. They are, I'll be straight up with everybody. I wrote this, and I started buying models because I'm now going to build a Black Templar army. I knew the Templar lore, but now when you read it hard, you're like, oh, I want to play Templar.
Also, the fact the Black Templars just went, all these Marines, luxury. Life of nonsense. We need to be serious about this. You're like, wow, you guys are.
Yeah.
They didn't double down. They tripled down.
Yeah. I the Black Templars, it's weird because I usually don't like things that are the anathema to fun. And they definitely are. Like, no one hates fun more than the Black Templars.
Heresy.
Yeah. It's just pure heresy. Yeah, they are. I mean, it's basically them and the sisters have competitions for who can be the most dour.
I heard someone was having some fun here. We're going to police the shit out of that.
Exactly. Here we come. We do. Nope. All right. But the truth about the Black Templar, that actually all of what they do originates from Sigismund. Sigismund took a personal affront to the traitors and the heresy because he is a true believer in the Emperor and the Great Crusade. Now, what's interesting here is we've also... Go ahead.
No, just... I think it's a big deal, though, because it's not just the emperor. There's tons of people that believe in the emperor. They're fervent about their beliefs. He's a big believer on what the emperor meant, what he tries trying to do with the Great Crusade, the imperial truth. That's what they're so passionate about, because there's tons of religious zealots that are the emperor is, you know, the god of mankind. These guys are more crusading for what the emperor meant.
Yes, I mean, you're right. The belief in the imperial truth is that the galaxy is there for mankind, and that mankind, the only way for mankind to actually survive and stand against the stars is to unite under one order, which was the Imperium of Mankind, and that anyone who doesn't believe in that is wrong. And not only are they wrong, they're actually potentially harming humanity. That is
not even potentially. They are harming humanity. Well, yeah, you've got to stop them.
So that is where the imperial truth is. And then the wording of the imperial truth, you know, goes a little bit goofier, because you also talk about killing all Xenos and any humanity that doesn't see the light of the emperor. But, you know, this is at their core what the Black Templar believe. What they believe is that they cherish peace with all their hearts, and they don't care how many men, women, and children they have to kill to get it.
Peacemaker 2 is already... Season 2 is already ready to go.
I'm so excited. It's going to be fantastic. That show was so messed up. It's that, between that and The Boys, I had a lot of really bad laughs. But for Sigismund and the founding of the Black Templars, they saw that their potential for achieving the peace that they were striving for destroyed by those they called their brothers. And so to this end, they decided that they were going to wage a new crusade. And this crusade was going to go forth and tame the galaxy just as the emperor had planned, but it's with a little bit of a twist to also destroy the heretics, which was a new thing that didn't exist before.
I like this a lot because of the fact that he could have been, a lot of the, even the Primarchs were hurt, almost destroyed mentally after all this stuff happened. I like the fact that he doubled down on the fact of, nope, I'm going to do something about this. And they still take the same oath to this day, all the High Marshals. And I think it's a big deal because he started this.
Yeah, and the oath is to prove his loyalty, never resting on the prosecution of his duties against the enemies of the emperor. That's what every High Marshal has to swear on, and they go forth. And I think Brad just made a really great point there. I want to kind of double down on. Post the Solar Wars, a lot of the Primarchs were kind of mentally broken, and they became single-minded. We talked about that's how Midoran got trapped in the dumbest trap ever by Petarabo, because he was just so focused on it. Leman threw himself into the Eye of Terror. Korax threw himself into the Eye of Terror. I mean, Gilliman went hand-to-hand with Fulgrim for what appears to be no reason. Could have just blown him up with, you know, rockets, and instead went hand-to-hand. They all made these mistakes. I mean, Sigismund kind of did the same thing with Abaddon, and, you know, lesson learned. But the difference was the Black Templar seemed to be much more controlled in their rage, because what they did was they took their rage, they took their anger, and they said, we're not going to give ground. We're not going to give up. We're not going to give an inch here. But our goal is to destroy you, and we are going to achieve that goal.
And it's focused rage is one of the biggest things.
And this is why the Black Templars are awesome. And so for the last 10,000 years, the Black Templar have been raging this crusade. They have been active in every sector. They've fought effectively every foe humanity has. There might be a couple Xenos they missed, but all the big ones they fought. And this is no sign of slowing down, because actually in the absolute most latest lore, they've turned it up again to an 11. We'll get there at the end of the cast, guys. So
they also just look badass because they're just
other models
on the board. Yeah. They're full black paint scheme with a white cross.
Yeah. I'll be honest. So I built my Death Watch army, and the reason I like Death Watch is they're black. I batch paint, and so when I want to build an army, I will go ahead and I'll collect like 5,000 points of an army, and I just build them. It's really nice when I just get to spray paint them and do a couple edge highlights. It's just a lot easier than, say, Imperial Fists, or the worst one I've ever had to do, which was Thousand Suns. That harmed me, trying to paint Thousand Suns. Rubric Marines, like that hurt. So
it's wild because the Black Templars are able to fight in all these things because they're just a fully mobile legion. They're, it also, as of now, they're a legion. They're not a chapter.
We'll get to there later. Their current numbers get interesting. We'll get there in a bit, guys. It's a fun piece.
They just roll.
Yeah.
Effectively, I'm picking a fight with anybody that doesn't have the Imperial Truth in mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And in fact, sometimes they do it even in lieu of being told, no, we're good now, by the Ecclesiarchy. But let's party, though. So let's talk about the Black Templars, exactly at Brad's point. The main piece of the Black Templars, probably the most important piece to me, is that they're a fully mobile legion. No home world. They don't even have a home base. You know, the Imperial Fists had the Phalanx floating around, and the Crimson Fist had the Rutilus Tyrannus until they put it on a planet, and then that didn't end well. The Black Templar don't have that. The Black Templar are completely spread out throughout the galaxy. And this is because they've been on a nonstop war footing since day one. And this is something I want to spend a lot of time on because they are the only ones that do this. So
they are, it goes into what they are, though. Even the names of units and everything else, they are a crusading force.
Period. Exactly.
That's what they are.
At all times. And the nice thing about their crusade is that the galaxy is kind of big, so there's no end to the crusade. You get to just keep expanding. Obviously, the entirety of the Imperial forces are mobile in nature. You know, you have a couple, I guess the planetary defense forces are not, but everything's mobile in nature. But they all have somewhere to kind of return from. Like a guard regiment will be raised on a planet. They never return there, but that guard regiment always has the promise of settling down somewhere. The Space Marines have these massive ships that transfer them all around to engage. And obviously we have an Imperial Navy, but all of them have a home base. You know, the Space Marines have their recruitment worlds for the most part. The Guardsmen, they're going to settle somewhere in the future. I mean, they're all going to die, but if they don't die, they'll settle somewhere. The Sisters have their convents, and even the Imperial Navy, which is technically mobile, still has major spaceports that they link back up in for resupply.
The Imperial Navy calls some of these ports as their home, period. That's where they come back to.
Exactly. All of the Black Templar are a basic perpetual motion machine of war, and that's why they call them the Crusades. And so to kind of dive into that a bit more, we're going to jump around chronologically, but it's because it actually makes more sense to tell it this way than it does to kind of actually do it in true chronological order. It'll make sense in a second, guys. But from their onset, the Black Templar didn't wage battles and engagements as like other parts of the Imperial forces did. For example, in the Scouring, the legions of Space Marines set out to destroy the remnants of the traitor legions, but they were only focused on destroying those who had gone to war with them before. That was kind of their goal. They were very single-minded in purpose.
I just love these guys because, as I said, we said a little bit in the Imperial Fist, because Doran himself was. These guys took Book of Grudges to a next level.
Oh, this is this is psychotic. I mean, God appeared and gave them, the quest for the Holy Grail. And they all decided to go and find said Holy Grail.
I mean, if you do something bad to them, this is some Talana kind of levels. This is for my people that know Steven Erikson. That's that kind of hatred. I will chase you till the ends of time.
Yes.
Like, that's not a distance, Brad. Don't care.
So the Black Templar at this time decided to wage, during the exact same era, a crusade of conquest. And this is because the Templar were focused not just on killing their enemies, but also preventing them from rising again. Again, the Space Marines just wanted revenge. The Space Marines were like, hey, remember Space Marine Ted? I'm going to go stab him. That was their goal. The Black Templar's goal was, we're going to stab Ted, and we're going to make sure there's never another Ted. And so
but it goes farther than that, though.
So psychotic.
They say, I'm going to stab Ted. I'm going to make sure that there's no other Teds. I'm going to take everything that Ted's ever owned or thought about owning and use it for my purposes now. And I'm going to take anybody that was around Ted and make them work for me.
And especially in this, like around this era of like this M31 era, the Black Templars actually did a lot of good for the Imperium almost by accident. Because one of the challenges you had with all of these Primarchs and Space Marines doing their revenge tour is they were just going to whatever system they heard chaos was in and wrecking that system and then going to the next one. They weren't conquering land. They were just doing it. The Black Templars were conquering. And so as the Black Templars left Sol and spread the galaxy.
Let's talk about one of the main things they were doing. They were conquering strategically relevant spots to continue their crusade.
Bingo.
So that they had resources. And when we talk conquer, a lot of the Marines, even some of my favorite Marines, do a very bad job of setting things up. We won. Cool. I clicked the W button and moved on with my life. They wreck the place, but then they immediately built up the place and made sure everybody there was loyal and giving them strategic resources. So I like it a lot. You make a good reference on this. It was more an Alexander the Great type of push where they made it so we're still getting supplies, where those people are still loyal, you know, or at least the people we think are loyal are still there, you know, and they're giving us everything that we need to, so I can keep going that, I want to keep going north, but I need to make sure that there's supply lines. We're constantly having new stuff for us to continue to crusade indefinitely.
Well, and that's why, I mean, the Alexander the Great is the best one I can think of, because he went from Greece to India, you know, at a time when there were no cars. So, you know, he had to conquer and build fortifications the entire way so he didn't get attacked from behind. That's what the Black Templars were doing. They were spreading out from Seoul and making it so no one could jump in behind them. I mean, there's warp travel, so take that with a, I'm probably making more of an example than I am an actual functional thing, but whatever. This all changes, though, when Abaddon comes out of the Eye of Terror with a First Black Crusade.
This is a huge thing because it's a giant eye-opener. Because for the most part, everybody thought that Chaos was dispersed. All the forces of Chaos were just, you know, bands of... It was... We wanted to kill them. They were a nuisance. They were a problem. But they weren't organized together to do anything relevant.
Exactly.
Everybody thought, you know, however long it takes us to kill Chaos, whatever, they're not going to be a problem. And then Abaddon became a pretty big problem.
Pretty big problem. And then after that, you also got the resurgence of the Eldar, who kind of got their stuff together and started getting upset. The Imperium kept taking their homeworlds. The Drukhari jumping out of the warp to raid them. Orcs. We're going to be doing a lot of orcs as we talk through this. And, I mean, it's a well after this. The first contact with Tyranids and maybe the Tau, who cares? Over the millennia, the Imperium itself just realized that it too was engaged in an infinite war. And for the Black Templar, they went, all right, well, we're going to win this infinite war. That was their system. So jumping ahead a bit, we're going to cover now the next big piece of the Black Templar to kind of understand who they are is the rise of the Ecclesiarchy. And so whereas the Black Templar are totally okay with engaging in a 10,000 plus year struggle against every enemy of mankind, no matter how innumerable they are, humans develop war weariness. It's just a thing.
No, when I'm playing Civ, it's crazy how bad my guys start performing. Yeah. If I stay at war, sometimes my people bitch after I'm at war for, you know, 6,000 straight years. I don't know what their problem
is. Exactly. So in order to combat this, the Ecclesiarchy actually copies from the Black Templar. And so the reason I'm covering this is going to make sense in a second. So rather than calling them wars, they begin calling them crusades. And so the reason I'm bringing this up is when we're talking about how the Black Templars are unique and that they go on crusades, anyone who's read Black Library books would be like, well, wait, there's when I read Gaunt's Ghosts, there were crusades. When I read Caiaphas Cain, there's crusades. There's always crusades. They're different. And so that's what I do want to make it clear.
It's how they phrase these two, because they get the populace behind them because they are crusades for the Imperium, for the Emperor. And they get people riled up, basically, like, of course I want to do this. This is bettering mankind. I am part of mankind. And they kind of get this ever-growing crescendo wave that's just more and more people in.
And the reason I want to bring this up is that they're two very different crusades. The Black Templar crusades are truly a crusade. They are going to a place and they are going to fight until they all die or their opponents all die. Full stop. The Imperial crusades are more political. There is, and we will discuss some of them later, they may say, all right, crusade completed, whether it was completed or not. They're designed more as recruitment pushes. So, for example, when the Imperium declares a crusade, it's going to be accompanied with, you know, they're going to raise regiments, they're going to move troops around. It becomes a whole, it's almost an industrial call. Whereas when the Black Templar declare a crusade, a bunch of Black Templar ships show up somewhere and begin crusading. That's the thing. And then the Imperium may or may not join them. The Sisters like to a lot. So
the Imperium also, the rest of the Imperial, the Navy and everything else, a lot of times when they do a crusade, it is an actual, like, we're going to here to do this job done kind of.
Yeah.
The Templars went, hey, are there still Xenos in the universe? Well, looks like we're continuing on.
Exactly. And we'll get to some good references to this in a little bit. But to kind of fill in some gaps here, I'm going to talk a bit about the structure of the Black Templar, because they are very different from other Space Marine legions.
Wildly.
So being on a crusade for 10,000 years will do this for you. To me, one of the most interesting pieces is how they do their recruitment. So no homeworld to pull from. So the Black Templars still have to recruit. In fact, they're probably taking more losses than any other legion because they're most at war. I'm trying to think if anyone else fights as much as the Black Templar do. I assume not.
No, the people that are the most similar to this are weirdly the Death Watch.
That would make sense. You're right. Because the Death Watch would be constantly deploying as well. So yeah, and they actually, spoiler alert, guys, jump ahead, but guess who serves in Death Watch a lot? The Black Templars are big fans. So the Black Templars still have to recruit. So what they do is when they conquer a world, they build what's called a keep on that world. And it becomes that keep is a local garrison to both keep the world safe. So it gives them a place to fortify out of, but also becomes a mini recruitment center. At these fortresses, aspirants will just basically walk up to it and ask to join. This is unlike everybody else. All the other legions I could be wrong on this, but from all the ones that we've covered so far, they have a recruitment world. They may have an event like the Blood Angels do, but they are chosen by the main legion there. In this situation, people are volunteering.
Let's talk about this, though, because, sorry, I'm going to give some heresy here because the Black Templar lovers are going to crush me. They have to have some sort of psychic power because they just grab the people, come to them in waves. It's crazy. Oh,
I have a theory on this. My theory on this is actually it's advertising is what I think this is.
You think they just have the best propaganda?
Yeah, I do. But it makes
sense. They just have so many people show up.
Yeah.
But they talk about it. They have waves of the populace immediately wants to be part of
this. Right. But so my theory on this, and it's based actually on good amount of fact. The Black Templars are the most famous legion to the Imperium. If you think of it, if you're an Imperial citizen, the Ecclesiarchy kind of runs everything. If they're going to put stuff on the news, who goes on the news more than the Black Templars?
That's true.
And it's the Black Templars and the Guard. Those are the two people who are going to be on the news all the time. And anyone can be a guardsman. So you want to be a Black Templar. On top of that, every one of the worlds that they have their keeps on is a world that the Black Templars conquered. So yes, some of them may have been conquered against their will, but for a lot of them, it's not. A lot of them, these are worlds that were under attack by Chaos, by Xenos. They had like a rogue psyker who's running them, and the Black Templars are the ones who showed up and killed them all and saved the local people. So there's always, they're heroes / gods to the local populace. So of course, everyone's going to volunteer to be one. That was always my theory. And so they just get they get hordes of volunteers.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Like they have a lot of their stories are almost as soon as they take over the planet, they just have Disney World lines of people getting ready to go in.
But what's cool about that, they don't accept a lot. So it's written in, I'll be candid, guys, the Black Templar are a little bit trickier to write about. They've only had three codexes. Two is a third coming.
There's not.
Well, they've had two because they had the ninth edition codex. And then
but the one's out yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
They had two different white dwarf artists.
It's white dwarf, but they've had their own novels and they are major players in a lot of when they do novels about conflicts, they are a major player. So that's how we know them more. So, but what's cool about
let's go into the way that they do it. It doesn't make a little sense though, because they basically say they barely take anybody out of this. I think that they basically take these people and then weed them down after. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I see.
Because all of these guys, they accept five recruits a year kind of thing. But I think that there was a couple hundred And they, through testing and everything else, got weeded down to five. It's not like they just chose five.
Well, this is
Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, and Mike and said, yo, go, you know, you're in there.
Yeah, the truth is, this is the classic GW math. I mean, even if there are 1,000 Black Templar worlds, they can't go off five recruits because only one of those five will survive. So they would give them 1,000 Space Marines a year, which is a lot, except for the fact that they're engaged in conflict every minute of every day, everywhere. So they're losing more than that. They would actually become an extinct legion. So
I think, also because they send out their neophytes. These are people that just aren't even done.
Well, yeah, let's actually get to the neophytes. So just to kind of clean this up a little, just real quick. Yeah, so the chapter keeps except volunteers effectively. The volunteers come in, and the Blood Angels, we see in this, there's some trials by combat. It's like everything happens, and then they decide, yes, these people can make it, and they give them the gene seed right there in the chapter keep. From the chapter keep, though, is where this gets goofy. Once they've gotten about 20, once a keep has about 20 or so of these, which, you know, they're called neophytes, because the term, you know, neophyte, for those who didn't listen to earlier casts, that's the term for somebody who's an aspiring Space Marine. They've had the gene seeds put into them, they've had initial training, but they haven't finalized their training. At that stage,
past the trials. I mean, every Marine chapter has its own trials to be a full-fledged Marine.
Yeah. Some of them are weird. Just candidly. Some of them are super weird. So these neophytes, so they take like the 20 of them or so, and they just pack them on a ship and send them to a crusade. That's it. Like, yeah, you are going to land, get off the plane, and combat is tomorrow. The neophytes, once they arrive, they're assigned to what's called an initiate, which is their term for Space Marine or within the Black Templars. And this is what I love about the Black Templars. The initiate, each neophyte gets assigned to one initiate, you know, and vice versa. The initiate is then provides one-on-one instruction and mentorship, both in training on the battlefield, but also in everything else, as they're deployed together. They fight side by side.
They don't just fight side by side, but they give them exactly what it means to be a Black Templar. Also, what it really means for the Imperial truth, what we're trying to do. This is why we're doing it. But also, these guys are fighting. One of my favorite things about this, and why I was kind of excited to do the Black Templar part of the cast, is on the board, they do these things. In the game, they have these mixed squads, and they really, the lore really takes shape on the board.
Yeah, when you play Black Templars, your squads are 50-50. Half of them are initiates. Half of them are neophytes. That is just the way it's written. And the rules have changed a little bit. I'm interested to see what they do in 10th edition with it. But that's how they're designed. The cool thing about this is the initiate decides when the neophyte's ready to be promoted. So where I love this is that the Black Templars are trained not by a master or a chaplain or some person. They're trained by the soldier next to them. So if you've read or watched All Quiet in the Western Front, you get what I'm referring to. It makes much better soldiers. So fun story though on the neophytes. And this is a fun story about GW having to sell models.
Hold on. Hold please. Boo.
So this is funny.
Continue.
Because the neophytes are deployed with the squads, the Black Templars don't have scouts. Because normally the scouts, as I've teased Brad for before, because Brad likes to use scouts to screen out opponents, are child soldiers used by the Space Marines and that Brad sacrifices as cannon fodder. The Black Templar don't do this, except they kind of do now. So in the lore, there are no scouts. But in the books, in the codexes, sometimes the neophytes will take on the role of a scout marine. And how this manifests itself is that if you play Black Templars, you can run Space Marine scouts that are Black Templar scouts, even though there are no scouts in Black Templar. It's the same with heavy weapon squads.
Heavy weapons teams.
Black Templar are a melee army. They're not supposed to have heavy weapons, but if you want to run a Devastator squad or an Eradicator squad, I mean, you can. You're just not supposed to.
Yeah, but
no psychers. No psychers. You cannot run psychers. Yeah. And we'll get to them in a minute. And there's more differences in the way they structure, though, beyond just the neophyte thing. So another thing I love, They don't have sergeants. Every squad, usually when you play Space Marines, one member of your squad is a sergeant. And if you're someone like me, you always forget which one it is. And then you accidentally pull the wrong model. I'm a master.
And then no longer have their special weapon.
Yeah, I have been doing that for 20 years. So just the way I like to play this. And this
you
is
also consistently put him in the middle, and that's
for no reason. I have no idea. I this is why I think I want to play Black Templar. The sergeant problem goes away for me. The reason they don't have sergeants is because the Black Templars just promote anyone who stands out into the next tier up. So instead, all top performing initiates who would normally become a sergeant actually form a different squad called Sword Brethren. Space Marines, regular Space Marines, kind of have this in Space Marine veteran squads, but the Sword Brethren are an elite. They're only within Black Templar, and they're just cooler than a regular Space Marine sergeant. Sorry, just gonna call it out.
Sword Brethren are badass, by the way.
Well, that's the thing,
and they are pretty badass in the game too. But they have a wild way because they don't promote these guys and then, you know, do a ceremony or go back to anywhere because they're losing people kind of left and right because they're fighting the way that they fight. Does just kind of lead to casualties. You're right up on top of people. So they do field promotions to different styles right away.
Well, yeah, and the Sword Brethren are the ones who, and this, what Brad's discussing is perfect here, perfect transition. The Sword Brethren actually become the Marshals. So should the Marshal die in the Crusade, a Sword Brethren steps up into that role. And, you know, we're talking, when we say Crusades, again, these guys aren't running downhill on opponents. A Black Templar Crusade might involve a craft world. It might, you know, it could easily involve the beginnings of an Orc Wa or a full-blown Orc Wa. They lose people, but the Crusade must go on. And so the Crusade, and what I love about this, the Sword Brethren, is when a Sword Brethren needs to get promoted, they've kept the old tradition of the Imperial Fists with the Templar, in which all the Sword Brethren who want to take up the mantle of Marshal enter a 1v1 tournament, not to the death.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
If you remember Sigismund, I talked about this.
Yep, not to the death. There's no value. There's no reason to kill a brother over an honor duel. And so at the end of it, whoever wins this 1v1 tournament is the new Marshal. I don't think anyone else does this, although I want to believe the Space Wolves would. But I could
just have a couple different things about that. They do contests, but they're not even just straight contests or combat.
And the Space Wolves, I'm sure the Space Wolves do this, but I don't think it's like to get promoted. I think it's just Saturday is tournament day. You know?
Yep.
Like tournament and drinking day. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But so that's also segues into a Marshal. And I want to get into what Marshals are, because Marshals have the same general title, but a very different function. So a Marshal is at its core a captain. If you look at Space Marine armies, it's the same. It's in rank, it's the same as a captain, but in function, it's massively different because of one word. And that word is autonomy. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's autonomy, but also he's expected to build fortresses and make new recruitment centers effectively. And continue effectively giving them supply lines as they continue and push their crusade. So this guy has a ton of stuff on his plate besides being the war leader. You know what I mean? You have to go, hey, man, here's the plans for these 14 buildings and how are we getting all our supplies? He has to be a logistics master also, effectively.
Exactly. And that's what makes the Marshal so cool, because the Marshal is going to be often on the other side of the galaxy from what's called the High Marshal. So to Brad's point, this person's in charge of all their own recruitment. That is not something a captain normally is dealing with. A captain, you know, will ask for it, but they're not in charge of actually organizing their own logistics for recruitment. He's also going to be in charge of his own fleet. He's going to, like, everything is there. The Marshals are this, because the way it's set up is, and we'll explain why in a minute, each Black Templar Crusade is almost an independent army. So that's what makes,
I think they're basically chapter masters.
Yeah, they are. Right. Exactly. They're a captain, but they're truly a chapter master. And this is partly because we'll jump into this now, is some of the size differences we're talking about. Because the Black Templars, they're decentralized, but they're still somewhat centralized. The closest example I have for you is Death Watch. The Death Watch are spread all around the galaxy, independent bodies doing stuff. They still report back their information, but they act and they go. So the marshal is probably closest to a Death Watch cap.
Watchmaster.
Yeah. But let's go into the High Marshal. And the High Marshal is cool. It's a weird one. The High Marshal is really no different from a Chapter Master. The stuff's the same. You know, they interact. They have direct interaction with their legions. They speak back with Terra, all that stuff. However, the High Marshal of the Black Templar has one more important task, and that is to keep the Inquisition as far away from them as they possibly can. Not in the same way that the Dark Angels are, but to the same effect, because they don't want to get destroyed.
It's a little bit easier now because of the fact that when Bobby G came back, he effectively threw out the Codex Astartes.
Yeah.
But the Codex Astartes says a chapter must number 1,000 or less full-fledged space marines. That doesn't count. That basically would be the neophytes and everything else. But it's 1,000 active members. And the Black Templars are wildly more than that.
Yeah. The Black Templars are estimated to be at least 6,000. And this is the reason it's more.
They're not counting all the neophytes and stuff.
Of course, yeah. Oh, no. That's just space marines. This is because they're spread out throughout the galaxy. So it's impossible for the Imperium to keep track of their size, because you would literally be taking like year-long journeys from one spot of the galaxy to the other to count them. So there's no way to do it. The only person who knows the true number is the High Marshal. And he is not letting anyone know this. For good reasons, because just for reference, at 6,000 space marines, the Black Templar are probably as large, if not larger, than the Space Wolves and Dark Angels, who are not Codex compliant. They never broke their legions up. That is insane.
I still think it's way more than that, to be honest with you, because I would say it's double and triple, because you got to remember, like, in the original, you know, the original legions were fighting with just south of 100,000, and they're running around with what they think is about 6,000, but they don't count any. You have to immediately double it because they don't count any of the neophytes.
Yeah.
But they also don't count all of the support guys that could or could not be Marines that go along with this, you know?
My favorite part about this is that the Black Templars are a sub-faction that's at least 5 times larger, no, by 10 to 20 times larger than its founding chapter.
That's your story.
Yeah. Just calling it out. The Black Templar. So the Black Templar, you know, we talked up. I joked in the Sisters cast that it's so easy to make Sisters. We should just use only Sisters because we have millions of them, apparently, and we can't make that many Space Marines. Well, you can make a bunch of Black Templars. So let's just do that and reconquer the galaxy.
So many.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be the least fun galaxy on Earth because it's going to be run by Black Templar and the Sisters of Battle. Not exactly. It's not going to be a lot of highfalutin party times. The next group I want to talk about within the Black Templar dates back to Sigismund, and that's the Emperor's Champion.
They continue to that to this day.
Yeah. The Emperor's Champion is maybe the most important member in a crusade. And this is because the Emperor's Champion is, in effect, a super soldier within the Black Templar. They are imbued with the power of the Emperor. And I always like to, I'll explain this and I'll dive into my opinion on it. So the way this an Emperor's Champion is created is that all Black Templar on the eve of a battle meditate and think about, you know, and prepare for what's coming ahead. Every now and then, one of them will feel like the touch of the Emperor. Basically, in their meditation, they'll have the Emperor will come speak to them. They then get up and they go see their chaplain and tell the chaplain, here's what happened and here's my vision. And if the chaplain agrees that this is a true vision, then they get to don a special weaponry. It's the armor of faith and the black sword, and they're going to lead the chapter.
Which are the weaponry. Yep, and that is the weaponry, the symbolic weaponry of the Emperor's Champion. Yeah.
And this is more, when we say this, this kind of stuff always, I think, sometimes sounds like, oh, okay, so some guy claims he had a vision, blah, blah. This is real. We talked about this in the Sisters a lot more. There is, like, the Emperor does actually reach out and have an effect in the 41st millennia. He's entombed, but he's not dead. He is able to reach out. He's able to make contact. He does turn the tides of battle.
He's been powering up for 11,000 years. So
powering up, they've been shoving power into him. I mean,
No, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about the fact that all the prayers and everything else become reality because the warp exists.
That's true.
The warp entity of the Emperor. Emperor is on the Golden Throne. The shadow of the Emperor and the warp is a big old shadow. Yes. You know, he is casting it far.
And so, yeah, these Emperor's champions really are imbued, and they fight like with the power of Sigismund. And the important thing about this is like when we talked about the Blood Angels, where, you know, the Black Rage overcomes them. So the idea is on the battle, they're going to go first in the battle, but they're going to die that day. And we'll have another one and we'll get some more in the next battle. Well, no,
and the opposite here.
Yeah. An Emperor's champion could serve for decades as the head of the thing. And when that Emperor's champion dies in combat, it's viewed as a very bad omen for what's to come, because that means that the emperor's light is no longer upon the crusade. And in battle, by the way, on the tabletop, these guys are good. In the lore, these guys are insane.
Because they instantly go, they're basically, they are crusader. They're cavaliers, if you're doing D&D. They call out the largest foes from the opposing side. They're fighting giant monsters, huge behemoth.
There's a story of one taking out a defiler. Constructs. Yeah, if you don't know what defiler is, Google 40K defiler and know one of these guys took that down with a power sword. These guys do not screw around. One key part, though, about the Black Templars is what they don't have, and is a funny piece to the story. They don't have librarians.
At all.
Well, but they don't have them, but we'll get to them in a second. The Black Templars, they do this because they believe the powers of the warp corrupt. Most of their crusades are dealing with beings who've been corrupted by the warp. Chaos, Eldar, Imperial colonies in revolt, etc. So they have no psychers in their army, with a few exceptions. And I like the exceptions.
Because we have to get places.
Well, I like the exceptions. Because the first one is so astropaths and navigators. They don't consider them psychers. And I've had this debate with people before. Some people view it as like it's hypocritical, where it's like, oh, no psychers, but those ones are okay.
But they're not. They don't manipulate the warp. Exactly. They look into the warp.
Exactly.
They can see it. They're actually really good. To be fair, I've always wondered why they didn't use these guys in other roles, basically as detectors. If you have this guy rolling with you, they would see other psychers. You could immediately put some justice on those guys.
Probably because they're all kind of insane.
Yeah, that's also true. I mean, so you constantly see waking nightmares everywhere you go. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Get over it.
We gotta go through a walk through this busy crowd so you can tell me who in here's a psyker, or just fall into a ball on the ground screaming and crying. Okay, cool. You're gonna do that. All right. Never mind. We'll try again. So astropaths and navigators are okay. The other group that's totally okay with them are the Grey Knights. And this is, again, this is not hypocritical. This is because the Black Templar know what the Grey Knights are. The Grey Knights are imbued with the Emperor's gene seed. And the Black Templars
are kind of
a fan of the Emperor. Okay, you are literally a child of the being I care about most. And in history, no Grey Knight has ever fallen to corruption. The Black Templars say, we can trust you with your powers. And so they actually will regularly deploy with the Grey Knights to fight chaos. And the Black Templar are overjoyed to have them at their side. And I guarantee you the Grey Knights are super happy to have the Black Templar at their side. Does that mean I can run a Black Templar and Grey Knight army, Brad?
Yeah, possibly. You know what? You definitely could run a Death Watch with a crap ton of Black Templars shoulder pads.
Yeah.
They send a bananas amount of people.
I do have that. Watch. This is the funny part of the Psyker story. So the one problem that all the Black Templars have, remember, the Black Templars, when we say they don't like Psykers, we don't mean, hey, it's written down you can't have Psykers. Like, you know,
shoot those guys in the face.
Yeah. This isn't one of those things like, oh, yeah. If someone else is watching, don't do it. But, you know, they're kind of good guys, right? No, this is, I hate them. My soul hates them. And then you join the Death Watch and you have to hang out with them. Because the Death Watch use librarians. And I
all
just
all the time.
Yeah. And this makes me laugh because I keep thinking about like some scene where like there's a librarian from like, you know, the Ultramarines or wherever it is. And he just wakes up in the middle of the night and the Black Templar just above him holding a sword. Like, just what? What? Like, I was like, I could just see them constantly trying to kill.
I baked a cake for you. Yeah. You should eat it. Hey. Nobody else eat this cake. Yeah. You should eat this.
What's the scene in Super Troopers? Not that coffee. That one's for Rabbit. yeah, just nonstop. It doesn't matter, but it's a funny story. But let's now dive into the history of the Black Templars, which is where they really stand out.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
So we're going to go back all the way to the beginning. The Imperial Fists are broken up, and right basically day of Second Founding, Sigismund goes, all right, we're going on a crusade. Everybody, let's go.
Yeah.
And they
get
head
the
out.
Car. Let's do this.
Yeah, we're doing this. And they head out to the Donatello system, which I assume it was purple. Come on, that's a good one. That's a there you go. That was deep. All right. The Black Templars go out there to deal with the Night Lords. And they actually successfully corner the Night Lords out there and kill every single one. Full stop. The system is liberated from chaos. Next, the Black Templars are crusading and they have to go to Cadia because Abaddon has appeared. This one doesn't go great. It's weird. It doesn't go great, but it actually is fantastic. So
it also gets one of the biggest shit talk lines of all time.
Oh, this is amazing. Yeah. So Sigismund goes because Abaddon's there. And Sigismund and Abaddon finally have their duel. And Sigismund really wants to kill Abaddon. And Abaddon actually doesn't really care that much about Sigismund, if we're being honest. He's going to kill him because he's Imperial. But the hate here is much more one-sided than the other.
Well, yeah, I was saying, it's a really one-sided. We talked about it in the last one, but
yeah.
Abaddon, I mean, Sigismund does run him through, but Abaddon is juiced up by chaos, doesn't die. He doesn't just run him through. He also stabs him through the chest to the other side.
Oh, Abaddon has permanent scar from being stabbed by Sigismund. Abaddon also did have the talons of Horus, though, and Sigismund didn't have a good defense to that.
Oh, but this gives me so much joy on this because Sigismund gets cut down by the talons of Horus, but as he's about to die, basically does full eye contact with Abaddon and tells him, you will die as your weakling father died, soulless, honorless, weeping, and ashamed. Yeah. And he's just like, hey, man, too soon to live too much, bro.
Yeah. And then, by the way, he died, and Abaddon, to Abaddon's credit, Abaddon then took his body and then carved a message in it and the sword and sent it back to Terra. So this did go both ways.
Both of them went. Yeah, yeah, Abaddon's always been pretty hardcore as far as that. We went over that. There was never a time when he was a chill guy.
No. But this launches the Black Templar. The death of Sigismund is not taken as we failed. What are we doing? It actually invigorates the chapter to be more anti-chaos, to believe in themselves more, because the fact that these guys would come out of the Eye of Terror, do this much damage, tells us that we are on the righteous path to destroy them. But
double down.
Yeah.
Also, remember, and anyone that stands with them or could be possibly be corrupted by them.
Exactly. The next big piece of the Black Templar, we're actually going to skip over, and that's the War of the Beast. That's because we actually have a cast coming up in a few weeks, guys, where we're going to get into the War of the Beast. Rather than just do it here, we're going to go hard into War of the Beast. Instead, we're going to jump a bit further into something called the Howling. And this is the first crusade where the Black Templars really got to be the Black Templars. Now,
and I like this because on the table, this is a big thing because the vow is an actual, they're effectively casting a spell, even though they're not psychers. They get powered up by this. And on the tabletop, it's awesome because you have to choose a vow per battle when you fight with your Black Templar.
Let's jump into this. The Emperor's Champion, who we discussed earlier, leads the chapter in the vow before the battle. And to Brad's point, it's a sacred litany, like just like the one the guardsmen do. And you could say, well, does this one actually work? The guardsmen's ones work. How many times have you guys played against an Imperial Guard player who says his litanies? Because I'm just saying, if they do,
he would.
If they do, you're probably losing. They're just letting you know.
Best weapons in the galaxy.
Exactly. So the Black Templar ones, to Brad's point, they work on a tabletop, and they actually, this is one of the best parts of Lord of Tabletop I've seen in Space Marines. So the vows is accept any challenge no matter the odds. This has always, they've only had rules three times, guys. So this always has given a boost to hand-to-hand combat damage, either increasing damage, increasing armor penetration. It's one of those two, but it makes it so you can fight through an enemy, do more damage to your enemy. The next one is uphold the honor of the Emperor, which makes them immune to fear and more resistant to damage. So they'll either feel no pain.
They're an invulnerable. Yep.
Yep.
I like the next two, though, because they're specific to what they're fighting.
You like the next two because it's the only two I've ever seen anyone play on a tabletop.
People have done Uphold the Honor of the Emperor in the first codex.
I guess you haven't fighting the first codex. More recently, it has always been this next one or the last one if you're playing against psychers. So the first one is Suffer Not the Unclean to Live. Awesome. Great name. And this makes the Templar a lot more lethal in hand-to-hand combat. So the difference is where the first one did more damage, these ones they hit more. So now they have sustained in 10th edition. We'll see what we get in the codex. Huh. But they wallop into you. And I can tell you, in 9th edition, when someone was running Suffer Not the Unclean to Live and they charged you, it sucked.
Well, if you're running a specific army, though, you know what you really don't like to see when you're running your Slakers? Or the witch, destroy the witch, maybe.
I'm going to be honest. I miss this part of the game. I miss on the tabletop having auto wins. So there was a period of time in 9th edition when Thousand Suns were really good. Really, really, really good. Unless they played Black Templar. And Black Templar would run Abhor the Witch, Destroy the Witch. And they would basically shrug off all the psychic damage. And
you got a 4-up, feel no pain. Yeah,
and I think I was going to plus the damage, I want to say, too. It was horrifying. I think right now, if you run this, I think you get, it's anti-psyker lethal. Anti-psyker 4+. So again, you play into an army that's all psychers. You auto-wound them on a 4 every time. Yeah.
I like this a lot because you can... I want them to be more specific. They did a little bit better. Right now, they're fine in 10th, but like in 9th, these were very specific.
I want that back.
Yep. 100%. I like the flavor of it.
I want that
back. And it made your army, it made a big deal. This is a huge ceremony that takes place.
Yep.
These guys do this and psych up specifically to defeat in their holy crusade. We are going to beat this, and they actually get power from the Emperor.
That's right, and they actually get power. That last bit's to keep it. They get power from the Emperor, because what we're talking about here is the Kalexi heresy, which was a wild story. So this is the result. There's one alien cyborg psyker, because GW, when they decide to make something, they go hog wild in the late 80s references. So cyborg, psyker, probably also mutant from outer space. There we go. Yeah, check every box. And the name was Cacodominus, because why not? Cacodominus was such a powerful psyker that he was able to control 1,300 planetary systems.
Which is bananas.
Which means, this is what the Emperor used to do when he would walk around. I mean, not Emperor could go further, but this is big. And again, because I'm me and I have Google, when I wrote this thing, I decided to look this up. The average distance between a star system and the Milky Way is 5 light years. So if you're talking 1,300 planetary systems, we're looking at probably close to 1,000 light year span. I'll be honest, I wanted to get the exact number, but I haven't taken calculus in about a little over 20 years, and I just couldn't do it. I tried, guys. So if someone's jumping in Discord and tell me what the actual distance would be in a 1,300 system gap in the galaxy, I actually would love to know. You can send me a direct message. I tried doing that math and got very ashamed. But anyway, the Imperium knew where Cacodamus was. but they couldn't get there because traveling through like all these light years to the home planet of like the most powerful psyker in the galaxy and killing him wasn't a possibility unless Abhor the Witch destroyed the witch. And
they took some serious casualties, but they also effectively just shook off his psychic attacks.
Yeah. Well, he couldn't dominate them. That was the big thing, is what his big power was, that he would psychically, he'd turn you into a thrall, and the Black Templars couldn't be thralled. And so they fought their whole way there. And his skull now sits in one of the ships, in one of the Black Templar ships. Now, the funny story of this is that, well, sorry, two things. One, let me say it differently. Other Imperial legions had tried this and failed. Now, we should note that this was in M34, so the Sisters of Silence weren't really a fighting force. They probably could have been equally useful here, just throw a bunch of blanks at them and let's see what happens. Well,
also, they did kind of have some collateral damage here.
Yeah, the funny note is that when they killed Kakodamas, his brain effectively exploded in the warp and created such a blinding flash that it blocked out the Astronomicon for some period of time. They don't tell how long, but they do say millions of ships crashed because of this. Like, it probably cost billions of lives killing him. So, you know.
Oopsie daisy.
Yeah. Then we move into about M35. And M35 is when the Black Templar begins shifting to being a bit more of a religious force.
Well, it's also because they shift to be more of a religious force and have a religious focus on it. But I also think that's because the Imperium itself becomes more focused on the Ecclesiarchy, and they keep filling their ranks with more and more of these very religious. I mean, the Imperium is just run by the Ecclesiarchy.
And I will say this, Black Templar fans may get upset about this. I'm actually not sure if the Black Templar necessarily actually shifted anything in this period, or just the Imperium shifted their propaganda machine to be more aligned with the Black Templars. It may be the Black Templars went through no change at this moment between this. The Black Templars of M41 might be identical to the Black Templars of M31, but the way that the Imperium describes them or interacts with them may have shifted. But a couple of key incidents happen to kind of lead into this. The first one is what's called the Barbarous Incursion, which is purged from Imperial records. All that we know about it is that the Black Templars and the Grey Knights fought some demons, and they won and wiped an entire demon incursion out.
But you're not allowed to talk and to let people know that chaos exists.
Yeah, because this is before. In modern 40K, people know chaos exists.
Because they broke the sky.
It's kind of there, yeah. Yeah, and M34, they didn't. So that's why it's an early redacted piece. But what's important about the redacted is that usually at this era, as we discussed in the first War of Armageddon, the Inquisition would then wipe out anyone who saw this. Not the Black Templars. Everyone who, they all fought the demons and went, okay, I'll just keep stabbing demons though. Are there more demons? Where else can we go to stab? Where else can we go to stab demons? I'm in. And the Grey Knights are probably like, these guys are A-okay. Where things get spice here is in the Wars of Apostasy. So this is Goj Vandir. So Goj Vandir rises to power, takes over the Ecclesiarchy, brings his sisters of battle. Yeah. And creates a civil war within the Imperium. What I love,
which gets
about this,
so messy that the Black Templars go, hey man, what is going on here?
Yeah,
you have to be messing shit up a lot.
Well, and Goj messed up real bad. This story is funny to me because, to Brad's point, messages are coming out to everyone saying, hey, there's something wrong back at Terra, like really wrong. And so the Black Templars go, fine. And they head back to Terra, like, what's going on here? And as they get back into this, it's actually when they get into the system, not even on Terra yet, into the system, they go to stop off at one of their keeps to kind of just, you know, say hi and high five each other, I guess. And they get there and the keep has been destroyed from an orbital bombardment ordered by Goj. And at that point, the Black Templars got on the radio.
I was saying, hold on, you should, yeah, just a time to do the meme on it. And they took that personally.
Yeah, they took that very personally. And yeah, the Black Templar put in the call of, hey, there's this guy on Terra and he needs his ass kicked real bad. Let's go. And so the Black Templars come en masse to Terra, along with obviously the Imperial Fists and a few others. They're the ones who sieged the fortress on Terra Unfortunately, they didn't get the ability to kill Goj because Goj is killed by the sisters after they met the Emperor.
And found out exactly that he was not for the Emperor. And they said, we took that personally and did some terrible things to Goj.
But a couple of key pieces that come out of this moment, though. So Goj obviously is dead. There's a reformation within the church of the ecclesiarchy. A couple of big pieces. First, the Black Templars get their new best friend, the sisters. These two are, this is peanut butter and jelly, or whatever you guys eat, not in the U.S. Ham and cheese. There we go. Perfect. In addition, the ecclesiarchy becomes much more established at this point as a positive force in the galaxy. And with the new Imperial Creed, they begin utilizing the Black Templar as an example of the success of the power of the Emperor.
This is also kind of why I think that there's wildly more Black Templars than that 6,000 and everything else, because the Black Templars become the poster children for what's going on. You know what I mean? So they get pushed. I think they also, and it doesn't show up as much on the board in 40K, but when you read the books and stuff, Black Templars show up with a giant amount of auxiliary everything else.
But
sisters, you know.
Yeah, and I view this era, I mean, it's weird my brain goes, but I go to like the 1940s newsreels. I can't do the voice, guys, but like that kind of reel of like, the Black Templar, I've conquered the Solarzia system. And like, and you see a bunch of Black Templar holding people's heads up and smiling for the camera. Like that's, to me, that's what the ecclesiarchs do with them. Because to be fair, that's exactly what the Black Templar are doing. They're not smiling, but they're totally just chopping heads off of heretics and holding it up and saying, oh, look, this one's also not a heretic anymore. Next problem. These two are perfect for each other. But, and I want to defend the Black Templars here. They're not true allies with the ecclesiarchy.
Oh, God, no.
This is
because they're not run at all by the ecclesiarchy. Nope. They answer, hold on, let me look in the mirror real quick. That's who I answer to. Yeah. Cool, let's keep going. And it has come back for the poor ecclesiarchy. They've gotten bitten a few times in the butt by this.
They have. My viewpoint is the Black Templar view the ecclesiarchy more as the enemy of my enemy is my friend. The ecclesiarchy is nice, but I don't report to you. And also I don't trust you. And there's actually been some funny ones to Brad's point. One of the ones I liked was the Benedictine War. And the Benedictine War was a conflict, where it was a crusade into the Benedictine system, which is where a bunch of Eldar were. I believe there was Exodites. I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure it was an Exodite system. And the Black Templar, along with the Sisters of Battle, Imperial Guard, Imperial Navy, and a bunch more, deploy out there. And the war's a grinder. It's massive casualties on both sides. And about halfway into the war, the ecclesiarchy just says, we did it, guys. You know, we've achieved our goal. The Emperor is proud of us. Everyone can go home. Nice job. And the Templar looked around and went, yeah, I can still see Eldar. So, and the,
ain't going out like that.
And the ecclesiarchy it's okay. You know, and this is one of those where basically didn't command them to stop, but they said, no, the crusade's over. And the Black Templar went, like hell it is. And the Black Templar
sent a strongly worded email that the Templars immediately did not open.
Yeah. And then the Black Templar proceeded to kill every Eldar in the entire system and declare their own victory at the end of it. Yeah, I like that story. But this era, one of my favorite parts of this is also a great disappointment of my own. So this era of the Black Templar gives me my favorite model in the entire game. And its rules have always been bad. I mean, 20 years probably.
No, it has not. It holds more guys.
It's still.
Land Raider Crusaders used to be boss mode. Hurricane Boulders.
When? Name the edition.
Fifth?
There we go. Okay. So, fine. A decade and a half.
You step away from the Land Raider Crusader.
I love the Land Raider Crusader. All right, so let's get into this. So, the Templars are crusading. They've hit a hive world, and it's rebuilt. It's just a human world in rebellion. And they've gotten pretty far, but they've reached the final hive and they cannot get in there because there's just hordes of soldiers and the fortifications they can't get in through. The transports that they had just wouldn't work. The rhinos and the razorbacks were too lightly armored, and the land raiders that they were using just didn't have enough capacity. So even if they could get somewhere, only a few troops could then get out. Until
take those last cannons off. You got so much more room.
Yeah. Oh, for activities.
Exactly. So much more room for activities.
So the Land Raider Crusader, which again is my favorite model in the game. Well, yeah, it probably isn't the entire game, actually. It's just awesome. It's got about 50% more capacity, although not under current rules. Now it has like two.
Four more.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? How did it hold more in 9th edition? And
people got bigger, man. They've been just eating more. Jesus. Just like America.
I know.
People get larger.
We have to Ozempic our space marines. So anyway, the Land Raider Crusader, they take all the las cannons off, which, by the way, were never that helpful to start with, and they just slap storm bolters and assault cannons onto it. And the thing looks awesome. And then they went, well, this works. And they just start driving these things into the walls, would crash through, the ramp would open, and the entire squad of Black Templar would rush out while all the guns shot everything.
Yeah, they just put suppressing fire.
And suppressing fire. Oh, that show's great. Yeah, this is, I love this model. It's one of my favorite things in the game. And the Black Templars invented it. So there you go. This gets us up to about M40. And by the
time
you're
going to make me sad here, but I already know we agreed on it.
The Black Templar established themselves as like the stalwart defenders of humanity. Chaos, Xenos, internal strife. Nothing is safe from the enduring might and the conviction of the Black Templars. And so the best example for that is going to be Helbrecht. We're going to skip Grimaldus, guys, because when we cover the Wars of Armageddon, he's going to be in basically every 10 minutes. So we'll just cover him there. But Helbrecht.
Fine.
I know you love
Helbrecht. Grimaldus. I like both of them, but Grimaldus is such a badass.
But the problem is, could we tell the Grimaldus story without just having to tell all of the story of Armageddon?
No, we'd have to do another cast.
That's why, because it's like all the stuff he does in Armageddon. There's a shrine to him in Armageddon still. Like, yeah, Grimaldus rocks, but I gotta give too much backstory.
Helbrecht effectively is the Dragon Reborn. He is Sigismund. He does everything. He's so hardcore, but he's not blind. The guy's a tactical monster, and he's a badass.
Yeah, and he also has one name. I tried looking it up. I can't find any other name. It's just Helbrecht.
You don't need it.
Yeah. Anyway, so Helbrecht rises through the ranks of the Black Templars very quickly, because him and Sigismund, to Brett's point, he's just the second coming of Sigismund. In combat, he's described as a brutal fighter. And the term they use, I like, is his tactical acumen and his pure savagery when fighting was everyone like, oh, good God, he's here? Ugh. And as a general, he's even better. We'll talk about it a little bit. He's this amazing space tactician, and much so that like when he arrives in Armageddon, which we'll get there in a little bit, the entire Imperial Navy and other Space Marine legions said, oh, yeah, no, he's in charge of the battle plan here. Like, this dude is one of the smartest in the entire galaxy. He's also fervent in his beliefs and his mission, but also not inflexible. He does understand the goals of the Imperium are more important than anything else. And this, again, is a reflection on Sigismund. Sigismund had that same moment when he went to Mars and had to leave Mars because it was better to leave Mars with the supplies than to kill the heretics that he really wanted to kill. So,
oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's do Helbrecht. So Helbrecht takes control of the Black Templars in 989 of M41. So he's been in charge for less than 1,000 years now. His predecessor, Marshal Cordhell, was killed by a Chaos Champion. That night, the Marshals had to hold a vote, and Helbrecht won.
Yeah, which took 11 seconds.
Yeah. Helbrecht won. Helbrecht won the vote the way a dictator wins the vote in their country. It's like, yeah. Actually, you better, because he was unanimous.
You're like, hey, man, you got 180 votes of 120 people that cast votes.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Helbrecht is, there was no question. And the first thing he does is he goes to exterminate a species known as the Xenarch. This is his first, he's like, I'm doing a crusade. What's the biggest badass out there that we need to go kill? These things over there called the Xenarch. All right, watch this. And he launches himself out there. What I like about the Xenarch is that just what they are, they're this weird, like, lightning-powered creature that have the best batteries in the galaxy. So he effectively invaded and stole technology of Tesla. Like Tesla Motors was just hanging out, and here comes Helbrecht screaming and left with the battery technology.
I like the next thing he does, though. That was funny.
Yeah.
But, like, he goes into the area basically known for the ghoul stars. Yeah. And why I like this is because of the fact that we talked about this in, well, forever ago, Cass.
Episode 72. I looked it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, it's a big deal because most Imperial generals and everything else didn't bother going there because they thought it would be too hard and they would get not enough benefit for it. And he just took that as, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Watch me, basically. Well, hold my beer.
And that's Helbrecht. Helbrecht was like, everyone says this is impossible. No, it's not. And so he goes to the Ghoul Stars to deal with what's called the Scythor Fiends. And the Scythor Fiends were this, like, really crazy race. And they were attacking shipping vessels. They were raiding surrounding systems. And they were just slaughtering anyone who tried to enter the system. And to Brad's point, everyone else in the Imperium just decided, well, we'll put kind of a blockade up around them and hope they don't spread. And Helbrecht went, no, they all die. Those are enemies of the Emperor. They need to die. And he went there and actually scoured the system of them to, and just, you know, for, just to reflect back on it, until he got to their home worlds, which he found were vacant. And so the belief is
they were gone.
They were gone, or were they gone? And Helbrecht was Helbrecht was about to just go, all right, I'll find where you are and kill you. Doesn't matter where, when he gets the call. And the call is Gaz has reappeared. And this is now
for Armageddon.
Yeah, the third war of Armageddon. So Gaz has already established himself within the Imperium as not good thing for Imperium. And Helbrecht rushes over and arrives basically just as Gaz is making planet fall on Armageddon. As we mentioned earlier, this part of the story is cool because Helbrecht arrives and takes complete control of the battle in space. The Black Templar ships, the Imperial Navy, the Imperial Fists, I think there are a couple other legions who are there. He's fully in charge, and his battle plan is perfect. Pretty quickly, he actually eliminates all of the orc vessels in orbit, just basically muting any reinforcements or offense on the ground. He then sends two full crusading forces down to the surface to wipe out the orcs. What happens next, though, is actually just kind of funny, because Gaz gets bored of the fight and teleports away, because we will eventually get a fourth War of Armageddon. Helbrecht vows, I'm going to kill this guy. And he's screaming, I'm going to kill Helbrecht. He hears an echo. And the echo is someone else saying, I'm going to kill Gaz. And he looks over at this man holding with an orc power claw for a hand and goes, I think I made a friend.
Regular human, though, because Commissar Yarik is just a dude.
Just a dude with a power claw. And they just kind of keep looking at each other going, well, I like you. And Helbrecht grabs Commissar Yarik, throws him onto his ship, and the two of them go hunting Gaz together.
That had to imagine the happiness on that ship. That's the
worst ship ever. These are, like, I love the stories of Yarik, but, like, commissars in general, Gaunt is the only commissar that's actually someone you're like, oh, I kind of like that one. Every other commissar in a story is a psychopath. And so now you have the two maybe biggest, like, aggressive psychopaths in the galaxy standing on a bridge. There are zero games of cards being played on that bridge. Zero.
It's probably not a board game night, you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no Settlers of Catan being rocked out. You know, this is all serious. Unfortunately for Helbrecht, though, the next piece of his legacy is a loss. So he is... While hunting for Gaz, a Necron tomb world erupts in part of the galaxy. And by erupts, I mean it was bad.
The thing is I actually think this is just like on the game when you're playing 40K.
Yep.
He meets something he's never met before. So he's not sure how they're supposed to fight against it. He also doesn't know how serious it is. And it was a real deal because these guys, the Necrons, show up. He didn't know exactly what they were. Also, Imatek the Stormlord was there.
Yeah, that's the big one.
The big dog. Yeah.
Is it the Imperium had encountered Necrons before, but it was more like freshly awakening tomb worlds, and they were smaller. Imhotep the Stormlord is the head of the Sawtek dynasty, which is the most powerful of all the Necron tomb worlds. And it was, I believe, fully awakened at this point. So he's landing into something where all of your, to Brad's point, all of the prior information on this is like, oh, they're Necrons. All right, well, bolters work, you know, type thing. Here's what you do. Watch out. They can teleport. Here's some tricks. And he's hitting the strongest version of them with probably the best Pharaon that they have until the Silent King returns. And it doesn't go great. The Crusade is just, they're ground to a halt pretty quickly. Helbrecht is not cool with that and discovers where Imhotep is and teleports himself to Imhotep to fight him. And again, as I said before, Helbrecht can throw down. Helbrecht and Imhotep are going at it, and Helbrecht is honestly scoring 20 hits to one on Imhotep.
Just letting you know, if you fought this on the board, Helbrecht would stuff Imhotep into a wood chipper. But
oh yeah, the current Imhotep rules are terrible.
Yeah, he would just
terrible.
Some smoke.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen him on the board since 8th.
He gives a CP.
Yeah. I haven't seen him on the board since 8th edition. There we go. But Imhotep, but what I like about the story is that Helbrecht's like wrecking him, but Imhotep's Necrodermis is one of the most advanced in the entire galaxy, and he's healing instantly to all of it until Helbrecht literally just gets tired from all the fighting, and Imhotep knocks him down. But Imhotep stands above him, raises his axe, and doesn't kill him. He just cuts off his right hand and says,
well, he respected his fighting acumen, basically.
And said,
Now, this is one of my favorites with Helbrecht. So, because he has his first, basically his first L. And you're like, that's really, the first loss is how you judge a character of someone.
Yeah.
Helbrecht decides he suffered an L, and he was going to go on a 5-year crusade of penance to atone for his defeat. What the hell does that mean?
Yes.
He was already crusading.
Yes. Like, thank you. It says in the codex, like, it was a 5-year like penance. So was he not in charge? Was he doing the stuff he was doing anyway? Like, there's, I don't know what that looks like, but apparently he spent 5 years really sad and really, I assume, still stabbing a bunch of stuff.
Like nonstop stabbing.
Yeah. But what's funny and lame, but it's funny, is he eventually goes back to, you know, HQ, which is the phalanx. Which, again, there are, he has more people under his command than the entirety of the Imperial Fist by a power of at least 6. Probably a lot more than that. Yeah. And he goes and he prays by his Primarch's hand. And then he looks down at his cybernetic hand and has a moment, kind of like in Star Wars, when Luke Skywalker is looking at his father and his cybernetic hand and realizing that this isn't a loss. This actually makes me closer to my primordial father, Rogel Dorn. And
even though Dorn didn't have a cybernetic hand.
Yeah, I know. It's actually, he should have gone hung out with like the Ferris Manus memorial. Yeah. Be like, oh, same, right? But anyway, so Helbrecht decides, all right, I'm back now. And he goes specifically to go find Imhotep again. And this is another, it's a great story because they do. He tracks down Emotech's fleet and they attack and they corner them. And again, Helbrecht teleports on. And this time, Helbrecht actually puts a beating on Imhotep. I don't know if he got a better sword or what he did. They don't explain it. The first time, every time he hit Imhotep, Imhotep's Necrodermis healed. The second time, I guess it didn't. I really have no idea how this worked differently. But anyway.
Imhotep does tell him that they're 1-1.
Well, yeah, that's the cool part.
And smoke bombs, it rolls out.
Yeah, because Imhotep realizes he's losing and just goes, he congratulates him on a great fight. And he gives him, you have won this round, but I'm going over here. And teleports away. At which point, Helbrecht loses his mind with anger because he does not want to be denied this victory.
Well, let's talk about what happens, though. So Helbrecht is super bent out of shape that this just happened. And then he finds out Abaddon just destroyed Cadia. Also, yeah. Forces of Ghazgul are are start coming in, that he knows that. So he's basically losing his mind because he's like, I'm killing Emetek. Wait a second. I got to go kill Abaddon. Hold on a second. Somebody said something about Gaz being over on the west side of town. Where the hell am I going?
But also, and to make matters worse, with the rift forming, a bunch of Black Templar Crusades went dark. So he's getting all the information is coming in at once. And Helbrecht is kind of like torn as to where do I go? And luckily for him, the greatest of the Primarchs arrives, Gilliman. And I'm not kidding, because I really do like Gilliman this much. Gilliman arrives to come to Helbrecht for two reasons. He came to Helbrecht directly in person. First, to ask him to accept the new Primaris Marines. And second, to help him secure the galaxy. The funny part about this story is that Helbrecht is sitting there, to Brad's point, Gaz is back. Emotek just got away. Abaddon's back. I have stuff to do. Oh, shit. Gilliman's here. Codex Astartes. And,
it's just immediately we are not following the Codex Astartes.
Oh, no. And so they meet, and Helbrecht is expecting Gilliman to make a comment about it. And Gilliman just kind of looks around the ship and sees way too many Space Marines and goes, all right. Anyway, do you want more Space Marines?
Yeah, exactly. That
was Gilliman's pitch. Instead of saying you have too many, he's like, hey, you have a lot. I'd like to give you thousands more. You okay with that? And this is funny because, of course, the flip side is Gilliman's concerned that given how proud and how almost like psychotic and fanatic the Black Templars were, that they wouldn't accept these new Space Marines. Helbrecht was like, so more people to do stabbing? I like that. That works for me.
He effectively goes, get in the car, idiot.
Exactly. We're doing this. The second thing Gilliman does is amazing because Gilliman also says to Helbrecht, look, I know you have these people you want to go get, but the Imperium needs you. We've got, and he just basically shows him that the Imperium's effectively on fire. We've got Tyranid invasions, chaos pouring through the rifts, worlds are in rebellion, Necron tomb worlds, Drukhari raids, and just says to him, look, the Imperium needs you. We can't control this.
He goes, hey, what's a problem is the stuff in the red. And he's like, everything's red. He's like, that's kind of where I'm getting at here.
I will point out, he didn't mention the Tau. Just saying, he didn't mention the Tau. I'll defend that why, because this is around the same time the Tau event Horizon to half their army because they tried to do warp travel without Geller fields. And yeah, Helbrecht actually accepts this and says, you know what? You're right. The Imperium needs me. The Imperium needs us. We will stand with you. We will. And so he does back to back. He takes all the Primaris Marines and does a cool thing with them, by the way. Other legions, when they made Primaris Marines, made their own sections of their chapter that were Primaris Marines. Helbrecht doesn't. Helbrecht just spreads them out. He basically says, all right, I've got 10,000
space all over the place.
I've got 10,000 Space Marines, and I have 1,000 Primaris Marines or more. All right, 1 in 10, go. And spreads them around, showing a full acceptance of the Primaris Marines. This is the only chapter, I believe, except for the Ultramarines, that do this full bore. Everyone's in. And the next thing he does is he then grabs a bunch of Sword Brethren and just says, you're a marshal, you're a marshal, you're a marshal, you're a marshal. Gilliman's got a place for you to go. Go. And just sends them out into the galaxy. And they do. The Black Templar in current lore are clawing back parts of the galaxy to save the Imperium.
Whoa. You know, just leave a little bit of information out there. You might want to mention that he also crossed the Rubicon himself, he became a Primaris Marine.
Oh, no, and I don't understand. I like the Primaris line. I think it looks better. I think they're aesthetically better looking, and they're easier to build. Sorry, calling it out. But everyone else has a story of how they became a Primaris Marine. Helbrecht just does, which I'm assuming was probably him looking around going, hey, I'm not the tallest person on my ship anymore. Paul, fix that. And they just, you know, very angrily walked into some chamber and got turned into a Primaris Marine and walked out of the chamber and went, all right, back to the crusade. There's no evidence on it. So anyway, that's kind of that for Black Templars, guys. I mean, there's a lot more because the Black Templars play a massive role in lore, but I think that should be good enough for everyone here to kind of help you understand like what the Black Templars are, why they're cool, why the people who love them really do love them and probably should. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. Next week, we're going to shift away from what I would consider a narrative to more of an informative cast. We're going to talk about space travel in the 41st millennia, how it functions, things like the Imperial Navy, trade routes, the Voidborn, etc. The goal here is to kind of just be somewhat informative. It'll help us set up some of our future stuff we want to do, because, you know, the travel around the galaxy is kind of a key part when we start talking about some of the major conflicts that exist and like how things move around and et cetera, et cetera. So until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
Yeah.
See you guys next week.